This is West Southwest on WMUK. I'm Arlene McMichael. Tim Tarantine is one of Kalamazoo County's fastest rising young leaders. The 37-year-old says he owes his success to strong mentors and to his parents. Today, we share his heartfelt story in a longer version of an interview he did with me that aired on November 3rd. Tarantine was recently named Western Michigan University's Vice President of Development and Alumni Relations. Previously, he was a VP for Southwest Michigan First, an economic development group. Let's start in the beginning, so to speak.
Yeah.
You went to Kalamazoo Central High School and...
Go Giants.
Hey, go Giants. Your first job was in the Kalamazoo Public Schools. You were a home support specialist at Indian Prairie Elementary School?
I was. I was a home support specialist with a wonderful principal named Karen Alessi. And I owe Karen a lot. She taught me how to work and work hard on behalf of children. We had so much fun. In light of working with some of the toughest situations I knew, I mean, kids were in some really dire situations that I would visit homes and engage with parents. And I worked with Karen, and she really taught me about how to be passionate and how to care about kids and how to go the extra mile. And that experience at KPS was amazing for me to start that way.
The next program that you worked with dealt with youth as well. Retired Yankee shortstop Derek Jeter, he has a the Turn 2 Foundation in town.
It sounds weird to hear you say retired.
I know, Yankee. I know.
That's
who wants
crazy.
To say retired? But yeah he's
no,
retired.
He is. That's
retired,
right.
And a married man now.
The foundation's 20 years old.
And actually, you were on the ground floor of an initiative they had here in Kalamazoo. It was kind of an anti-peer pressure type program that dealt with keeping kids off of alcohol and drugs. His father, Dr. Charles Jeter, is that
yes,
his name?
Correct.
Yeah, that he recruited you to be part of that.
Yeah, so that's an interesting story in my life. So Proud to Be Me is the name of the program. It still exists today, of which I'm proud to say, here in Michigan and in New York. And I believe they still do a Proud to Be Me in Tampa. I'm not certain. But I can say that job and Dr. Jeter's influence was huge on me. He threatened to fire me. I had stopped going to school. I had dropped out. I was partying and having all the fun I could. I was focused on a job. I had kind of given up on myself academically. And he told me he was going to fire me if I didn't go finish my degree. He told me very clearly that there was no demand for young African-American men running around with no education, and there was no future if I didn't go get my education. And so if I didn't go back, he was going to fire me. And so the woman who was working with me, Tanya Torres, who was a Western student, said, "Hey, I got a class this summer. I think you'll like it. You should try to come to this class and get back into school." And sure enough, I was introduced that semester to human communication. Actually, the class was female-male communication, and I was introduced to Dr. Mark Orby, who became my mentor and an academic and spiritual father in a lot of ways here on campus. And that turned my life around. So Dr. Jeter and Proud to Be Me really did a lot to turn my life around and told me that I had to go aspire to hire, and I was doing a great job for him. He was willing to fire me.
What year were you in school when you had dropped out?
I was a sophomore. It took me 7 years to get done with undergrad. I took the long, long route. I was a three-time super senior. So kids who are struggling, listen to me, please. You can make it. You can make it. Your life isn't how you start.
That's an incredible segue, because you've come a far way. You've been very open about the fact that you, as a child, was born in a Saginaw hospital and your mother had abandoned you there. 2 years later, Bonnie and Bob Tarantine adopted you.
You know, since that time, I've met my biological mother. I've met my entire biological family, and I love them dearly. We have a good relationship, and it took a lot of years and a lot of healing to get through those feelings of abandonment. And when I met her and understood the world that she was facing, I began to understand and have all kinds of compassion and love for her. And I love her dearly today. Unfortunately, my biological father, I met him and he passed away a short time after we met. But that was a tough thing to grow up with. You know, when the only person in your life who's supposed to love you lets you go, and you carry that in your heart, you carry that in your being, You don't do a lot of things very well. Relationships aren't a thing you do well. You're kind and fun, and you're the guy everybody wants to be around, but inside you're just dying on the indoors all the time. And so you learn to how to be a public success and a private failure in a lot of ways, in your own mind and in your own heart. And so that all is very real, and it's very real what I experienced. And on the other side of that reality is the power of love and of mentorship and of leadership. I mean, Bob and Bonnie Tarantine took a chance on me, and they didn't have to. Nothing I have I earned. Everything I have has been given to me. And through what's been given to me, I've tried to take advantage of those opportunities. But, Earlene, I'm a product of what Cory Booker calls a grand conspiracy of love. And I have no doubt that who I am today and where I am today is the product of a whole lot of people supporting and praying and helping me, because I didn't start on third base.
I'd like to talk about that love, talk about that mentoring and how it has helped shape who you are. If I'm not mistaken, your mom is an educator.
Is that correct? Yeah. So She's still working with kids. I can't get her to retire.
And I believe your father, was he a chemist?
He was a psychopharmacologist.
A psychopharmacologist.
So he ended up working for the Upjohn Company for 33 years before all the mergers and all that, yeah.
You went on to become the executive director of the Douglas Community Association, where there's any number of youth programs. I guess where I'm going with this is, given the great love that was shown to you by your parents, tell me how that experience helped shape you in working with children, first as a home support specialist and then later with the Proud to Be Me after school program, and onward as being the executive director of the Douglas Community Association. How did that inform who you were and how you responded with people?
Yeah, I don't know that it just informed. I think it dictated how I behaved. And it's taken a long time to get some victory over some of those things. But, you know, when you have had so many people step in the gap on your behalf who don't have to, there is an overwhelming sense of indebtedness. When you're in your teenage years trying to figure out who the heck you are, it's guilt. But on the way, as you get more mature, you start to understand that you are in debt. That idea, that Muhammad Ali idea, that service to others is the rent you pay for your seat here on earth, for your place here on earth. Well, that's for people who were prescribed a place. What about the kid and the little kids who don't really have place, and they still end up with one, with a place? Like when they're not supposed to, but they get it anyway. You certainly have a bend towards service, because that's the only way you've survived, right? That the grace that was extended to you, you have a debt to repay that. And that drove my thinking and my career path for a long time. Now, all of my friends in probably psychology and sociology say, well, you probably should have went and saw somebody about that, sat on a couch and told somebody. But I don't take for granted for a moment that my heart was tuned towards service. There was a lot of pain that came with that, but Earlene, the impact that approach had in my life and on other people's lives, because I cared about people and I cared about kids who were left behind, I'm proud of what I've tried to do to help people along the way. And it was born out of a bad place, but thank goodness we've been able to flip that a bit.
We're talking with Tim Tarantine, Western Michigan University's new Vice President for Development and Alumni Relations. There's any number of people that you call mentors. You were talking about Dr. Mark Orby, who's in the School of Communications here at Western Michigan University.
Yeah.
But another one that had a great impact actually on the entire community of Kalamazoo is Dr. Charles Warfield, who used to head the NAACP and used to do any number of other things. How did you get a close association with him, and how did he affect your life?
Wow. The impact that Chuck has had on me, it's still overwhelming. I'm sitting here talking to you with tears welling up in my eyes now.
He passed earlier this year for those who don't know.
I can't even remember when I met him. I was in high school when
you
I
were
met
in high
him.
School.
But I don't, there was no moment, right? There was no big boom that went off. When I got through at high school, I knew the Warfields. I respected them. I was, you know, known by them. And then I got to Douglas. And, you know, Chuck really cared about the community. And he was one of the first people to call me and say, hey, you know, I heard you at Douglas. What can I do to help? Let me come over and talk to you. We talked. And he and Moses Walker really became my lifeline. And Chuck Warfield and I, as he aged and I came into myself and my career, you know, this year was not just a loss to the community. I lost arguably my closest friend. And we talked about everything. And to have a man in his late 70s who would sit down and tell you truth about life, who would allow you to speak freely, to say those things that you can't say to everybody. There are pressures with leadership, and particularly being an African American in leadership, that you just can't talk about with everyone. You can't share those pains with everybody. And to have a friend who could not only hear you, but then respond with wisdom. Sometimes he'd quote a Bible verse and sometimes he'd tell a joke, but he would always tell me the truth. And when things happened in my life that were significant, Chuck was the first phone call I'd make. And it's been rough, to be honest with you, since he's been gone. But I've realized now that it's my turn. And so I channel my inner Chuck Warfield on a regular basis here on campus, and I try to be fair with people. I try to stand up, as he would say, on the right side of things.
Speaking of the various lessons that he gave you and leadership nuggets that he gave you, you went on from the Douglas Community Association to become a vice president, ultimately, I believe, executive vice president at Southwest Michigan First. And
yeah.
For individuals that aren't familiar with that group, that's a regional economic development organization that's based in Kalamazoo. It also does a lot of leadership training. What have you learned about leadership? I imagine that's a huge question.
That is probably a huge question.
You've acquired a lot of knowledge. But what are some nuggets that we can all chew on?
Well, I'd have to start at the definition that changed my life. So I had the opportunity, thanks to some very generous donors some time ago, as I was in between getting out of the Douglas Community Association, moving into the new port of call to Southwest Michigan First, I had the opportunity to go to Harvard University to the JFK School to learn about leadership. And I'll tell you, I learned through my experiences and through that definition that leadership is an activity. It's an activity that you exercise. And that is so important because I didn't know that you didn't have to be in position. You didn't have to be male, white, and have money to lead. I thought leadership was reserved for a class of people. I really did. I thought that you could do good things and you could make a difference where you are. But I never knew that leadership is really about what you do. And it's about what you do with people that makes the difference. And once I got that truth, I started to study, well, who are the people and leaders I admire? What are the leadership traits and activities that make me excited, that I say, wow, I want more of that in my world? They were always people who were doing the right thing with and by people. They were the type of people that people wanted to be around, who when they walked in the room, people actually wanted to engage them in a conversation, not hide in the corner when they walked in the room. We all have had leaders that are really smart, they're really strategic, they're really tactical, but when it comes to people, they absolutely miss it. And I have learned that I can't do anything. I mean, think about where I came from. I am nothing without other people. And my ability to bring people together and get people around a common goal and get people excited about what the future can be about and about what they can accomplish just by bringing their own great self to the table, that is what transforms companies. That's what transforms communities. That's what's going to transform the United States. If we don't infuse a different approach to leadership that is built on what we do with and for each other, we're going to be stuck. And we're going to be stuck in a very dangerous place of individualism that doesn't care about what happens to you. That as we learn, there's some places in economic development, we used to talk about certain communities who would rather see their own children starve than the next community's children eat. Like that tribalism, that building walls, not bridges approach, that's what happens when leadership is about a protected class of people. That's what happens when leadership is only for the few. That's what happens when people don't feel inspired and empowered. They feel defensive. And if I'm defensive, then I'm warring against you. So I learned through business and economic development that leadership is about what you do to bring people together to change the condition. And that's it. It's really just that simple. Will you have the courage to act? Will you have the courage to act on behalf of what's good to bring people together? And will you be committed to leaving things better than you found them, leaving more than you found in every situation? Imagine if the world was turned on to just doing that every day.
It sounds like you're talking about being other-focused and being civic-minded.
Sure. And I want us to be self-minded, too. We got to be aware of who we are and what our strengths are and what we bring to the table. That's part of your ability to bring others. So it's really about being focused on the outcome, to be honest with you. What is it going to take to change the condition? I mean, let's be real. There are people who go to work every day with the goal of doing less work. You can't build a foundation of change around that. So you got to find the people who want to make a difference. You got to bring those people together and create the kind of energy and what the scholars have called that critical mass of people who care about a condition, and then get them together to change it. And this amazing thing emerges, much like the Bronco football team. People want to be around winning. And even the naysayers will show up just to wait to see if you lose, but they show up. Right? They get involved.
I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about the importance of technical skills versus soft skills. You seem to be implying that a lot of people don't have good people skills. What's more important? What should people really focus on?
I don't think it's an issue of importance. I don't think it's an either or proposition. I think you need both. I think you need to know your craft and be great at it to have credibility to lead. And the conjuncture there is really important. Not or, and. Not but, and. You need to know how to engage other human beings. Because if we were to do a straw poll right now to the listeners and say, of all the trouble you have at work, the things that make your head hurt, are those things technical or are they human? And I guarantee you that probably over 70% of the problems people face every day have to do with interactions with human beings, not technical tasks and technology. The things that really drive us crazy, the thing that make us not want to come back tomorrow, is not the fact that your computer broke down or that the spreadsheet won't calculate correctly. It's your interaction with that other human being around the topic of that spreadsheet that makes you want to not come back to work, right? So it's a both and kind of thing, not an either or kind of thing. But I will tell you, I don't believe you can lead well without having both.
This would be a good time to highlight the fact that you won a really big award in 2015. It was called the 40 Under 40 Award.
Sure.
And that was at the International Economic Development Council Leadership Summit in Orlando.
Yeah.
It's a kind of a one-of-a-kind award recognizing young talent in economic development.
Yeah.
So you're doing some things and you seem to be getting it right. I'm wondering, have you ever experienced people not taking you as seriously from time to time by being young?
Oh, absolutely. And I get second-guessed every day.
And what lessons could you share in regard to that to, one, encourage younger leaders, and then on the flip side, those who must interact with younger leaders, what do they need to know?
Be conscious of people's opinions, but don't care. Be conscious, but don't be caring about what they think you can or cannot do. If I listened to all of the commentary, innuendos, verbal and nonverbal walls that get thrown up at me every day because I am who I am, 37 years old, super positive, African-American, progressive, fair, I typically don't lose my temper. I get second guessed for a lot. I've had leaders accuse me of not having an opinion because my effort is to bring people together to get to truth. And I hate consensus. I tell the truth all the time. It's just I don't beat people up with my opinion. And the second thing is I know when things deserve my opinion, right? And so there's some, the funny thing is like, the concept is I get 100 invitations every day to RSVP to foolishness. I'm serious. I get 100 invitations a day in my work life to...
You mean literal invitations, or you mean figuratively?
I mean both and, right? Where people are inviting you into scenarios where you can lose your credibility, where you lose your moral compass, where you lose your influence with human beings because you're reacting to the bait. And I have just said, well, just because you sent me an invitation doesn't mean I have to RSVP. And that approach drives some people crazy. The other thing that often gets people is my positivity and my hope. So I just always believe there's enough. I always believe that people can solve a problem. And I will naturally see what's good in a situation before I see what's bad in it. I'll see what I like about it before I can tell you the 10 things I don't. I think most of us could give us a very long list of the things we don't like. And if we turned around and said, well, what do you want? I think there's a lot of people in the world who couldn't articulate an answer to that question. And I lead with that question. That makes a lot of people really, really mad. Or I'm just not their cup of tea. And that's okay. I don't have any desire to be everybody's cup of tea. Because that means I'm not doing work that's cutting, that's breaking through anything. If everybody likes what you do, you probably aren't pushing the envelope much, right? So I'm okay with who I am. And it's taken me a long time to look in the mirror and be like, man, you all right. You're trying to do the right thing. You've come through a little bit. You're all right. You can help people. So I'm not going to trade that for people's opinions.
Currently, you're in the role of Vice President of Development and Alumni Relations at Western Michigan Sure. University. You started that in August. What is the nature of that role, and what do you hope to do moving forward? It's still early on.
Yeah. In a lot of ways, I get that question a lot, and I appreciate the question. In a lot of ways, it's too early to tell what the end will be. But I can tell you that I've inherited a group of very good people who are very talented and passionate about this university. And we've got the infrastructure. The ground has been laid well by my predecessor, by the president, by others who have worked for, you know, I think the foundation just celebrated 40 years. The Alumni Association is about the same age, if not older, in terms of the infrastructure and the people who have given of their time and efforts over the years. We're standing on a good foundation. Western Michigan University is still one of the best kept secrets in the world, in my mind. And I think we have a critical mass of leaders around the university campus as we prepare for a big time of transition that will continue to grow and build upon the foundation that was built, and we'll be able to compete in this very competitive marketplace of higher education. It is a competitive marketplace. And in my world of developing friends and funds and engaging alumni, it's super competitive. I mean, we're competing for discretionary dollars, people choosing what they do with their abundance. And we have to tell Western's story in a way that would compel them to want to engage their discretionary resources, time, talent, and treasure, with Western Michigan University. And I think we're pointing ourselves in that direction. We've already made great strides, and I think the team will pull together. And if I can be a good coach and I can be supportive and I can be strategic, we can change the condition for the better for Western Michigan. And I'm excited about that. There's nothing but opportunity in front of us.
Back to leadership, I'd like to talk a little bit about work-life balance. People have known you for economic development. Now they're seeing you in a university setting, kind of doing management, upper management stuff. We've seen you in K-12 education. We've seen you in the nonprofit realm. But we also see you on the stage as a singer. What is the name of your group? And what do you perform? And what does that do for you?
When did that start? Music has been... my heartbeat. I mean, music has saved my life on more times than I can imagine. Those times when I'm at my lowest, music is that place. I mean, music has a lot to do with my relationship with God. It has a lot to do with my relationship with people. Music is at the core of my being. And so since I was probably 4 or 5 years old, I've been singing on a stage with a microphone in my hand. I grew up in church. I went to Bible Baptist most of my life. And there was where I started that singing thing, and it became really important to me. So now I have a band. It's called The Soul Experience. Myself and Denise Wilhite are the co-leaders of that band. We've got the best musicians in the world, in my opinion. All of them are connected and or played here at Western Michigan University. And we love music. We love music that has stood the test of time. We love music that makes people feel better. We purposefully called the band The Soul Experience because for all of us, music was one of those things you experience in your soul. Somebody said music is the only form of time travel. Like, you know, when you hear a song from whatever and you go, you can smell where you were. And so we try to play music and create an entertainment environment that people have an experience for their soul when they come hear us play. And it's my stress relief. I can close my eyes with the mic and I can lay my troubles down. And when I get off that stage, I'm exhausted, but I'm better. And it's always been that way.
People can often see your band at the Union in downtown Kalamazoo.
Sure.
I know you've been at the Kalamazoo. You've done weddings. I know recently you were at the Kalamazoo Institute of Art.
Yeah.
You've been at, I think, at some casinos also,
I believe. We have. We opened for the Temptations at the State Theater.
Is that right?
We sure did. Yeah. Rocked out with Motown's finest. It was outstanding. It was great.
Amazing. I'm going to open up the floor to you. Is there anything that you would like to share? Any philosophies that you like to live by?
Yeah, I think Wes Moore, who I got to meet through Catalyst University and you know, South of Michigan First and Catalyst and the team there really prepared me. I mean, they did a great job of giving me the tools I needed. But one of the greatest gifts I ever got was being at Catalyst University and helping be a part of creating and executing that.
Well, that started about 6 years ago.
Yeah.
It provides about a day or day and a half of training.
Leadership development. Yeah, it's coming up this January. And I'm actually speaking this year, believe it or not. So I'm excited about that. But Wes Moore came to Catalyst, and Wes is a well-known author. And if you don't know his book, The Other Wes Moore is a outstanding book and story. But he's an African-American gentleman. He's got accolades too long to mention here. But he said something that just rocked my soul. He said that we are not products of our environment. We are products of our expectations. And I went, whoa. I mean, it knocked me out, because what that says to me is really my life story, that we're not necessarily how we got started. We're not even the environments we are in today. We are simply the products of what we expect from ourselves and of others. And having those expectations for ourselves, expecting better, expecting the world to get better, expecting our work to matter. Just our expectations are everything. And I would just encourage our listeners today, no matter if you're a multimillionaire sitting on your boat listening to the interview, or you're a kid struggling trying to figure out who you are and where your next meal's going to come from, you are not your environment. You are not what happened to you. You have capacity to be everything you expect. And I don't care what the naysayers or people who haven't experienced that truth in their life say to you, I'm a witness that God and hard work and love can transform anything, because it has me.
You've been listening to one of Kalamazoo County's fastest rising young leaders, Tim Tarrantine, who is a vice president at Western Michigan University. For West Southwest on WMUK, I'm Earlene McMichael.